Vanessa Potter spent 16 years as an award-winning broadcast producer in London's advertising industry before one day the lights went out. Suddenly losing her sight and slowly regaining some of it has led Vanessa to a change of direction, turning the camera upon herself to tell her story via immersive art and storytelling. And Vanessa Potter joins me now. Hi, Vanessa.
Hello.
What a roller coaster you have been on.
It has, and that is absolutely the word I would use. You don't expect this in your life, and this the illness that took away my sight hit me within 72 hours, and that was it. My sight was gone.
It must have been terrifying for you at the time.
It was. To be honest, though, the fear kind of comes in later because you're just in survival mode. So actually, I wasn't really processing anything as it was happening. And actually, as I was losing my sight, I was also losing the sensation in my hands and feet. So it was kind of a double whammy. It was two of my major senses being knocked out in this sort of, it's like a slow motion film, you know, as everything kind of unfurled. We were just so incredulous. I don't think there was actually even terror at that time. It was just so overwhelming. That all came later.
Yeah, it's funny how we assimilate things, isn't it?
Absolutely, and you kind of actually have to allow your brain time to process and to kind of take in the enormity of what's happened to you. That's certainly something I write a lot about, that kind of slow process of, you know, realising actually what's happened.
Now, you're a mum and you've got children around about you. This is 2012 we're talking about. So I presume as a mother you want to protect, so you don't want to scare your kids as well, do you?
No, I had two very small children at the time. My son was two. And my daughter was just coming up to five. And so, no, it was all horrible for them in some respect because I just disappeared. And it was my daughter's birthday, actually, at the time. So, yeah, mummy just went and I was away for 2 weeks. And I didn't want them to come and see me because so much was unknown. And I had, all sorts of drips sticking out of me. And I was very bruised from all the blood draws. And you don't look great when you're in that kind of situation. I didn't want to frighten them. So I used to talk to them on the phone, but lots of conversations. But no, for 2 weeks, I wasn't there.
That's a great idea, that, though, because recognising your voice, and that sounds fine.
Yes, I always remember having a little chat with my daughter, and it was so sweet. It's amazing you can connect very strongly in that way. And they were fine. In actual fact, for them, bizarrely, because so many family and friends kind of dived in to help us, because I needed 24-hour care. I couldn't do anything for myself. And so my husband was driving backwards and forwards from the house to the hospital. They had all these aunties and family coming to stay. It was marvelous. They were treated, they were taken out. So they didn't really understand at that young age exactly what had happened.
So describe for us, I know it's a difficult thing to do, but briefly describe to us how your sight went, because you didn't have any warning that this was coming, did you?
No, I woke up, well, actually, it started on a Sunday night. We'd been to the Malvern show up in Worcestershire, and I went to bed feeling exhausted because I'd actually just had a flu bug, and my eyes hurt. That's kind of the very first symptom. And then in the morning when I woke up, I had a very strange dizziness, not just a bit dizzy, but a very sort of disorientating dizziness, and my eyes were very painful. And so I whisked myself off to see the local doctor, and she did a lot of neurological tests with me, which showed that my balance was off, a lot of things that kind of made her think, no, that's not right. And then I was sent off to A&E, but because this is a very rare neurological condition, they didn't really know what I had, and everything came back clear. So it actually took 3 days for the sight to go, and it just gradually dimmed. I would wake up the following morning, and the world had gone kind of like a dark, muddy brown, and a lot of colour had gone. And then gradually, over time, everything started to creep from the outside in. So I ended up looking through a halo, and it was quite filmic. I suppose I can't help but think of it like that. It was like everyone was turning like a dimmer switch down, and the light was getting less and less and less and smaller. In the end, I was just looking through this tiny shaft, this pinprick of light, and then that went.
So you must be thinking at that point, it's all over.
I often try and kind of recapture those thoughts, and I wasn't actually. I was, what can I do? How can I get it back?
Hmm.
I suppose that's the producer, the problem solver. I never kind of went, well, this is it. It was, no, what are you going to do? And what are you doing? And come on, let's organise this. I mean, I organised everyone around me. it's a very deep instinct in me is to problem solve. And so, yeah, that's very much what I was doing. I was asking them, what are you doing? What's the next test? And what are you going to find out? And what's the plan? Because I'll do it. Whatever you need me to do, I'll do it.
And what was the plan then?
Do you know what? This is where bodies are an amazing thing. The plan was to see what my body did. I mean, of course, the staff at the hospital, I was at St. George's Hospital, the specialist neurological ward, they were amazing. They really did look after me. But ultimately, with an autoimmune and a neurological condition, it's your body that sorts it out. I mean, I had vitamin injections. I also had a very unusual treatment called plasma apheresis. The antibodies that have been causing the problems, they extract those from you and give you kind of nice, new, lovely blood. So that was kind of a complex process that I went through. But other than that, it was my body and some steroids, but basically your body does the healing.
Now, your sight started to come back, but where are you in that journey now?
Yeah, the sight returning was a very, very slow process. It took a year for it to get to where it is. And what I see now is an obscured view. So I have a very thick kind of mist, which is also described as visual snow. I think other people have similar things. I also have profound colour loss, which means that I struggle to separate out trees, for instance, or like a landscape is a bit of a nightmare for me because everything tends to look one uniform colour. Recognising faces. If I see someone who's been on holiday, has got a great suntan, no chance that I will see that. So I lose the subtle details of life.
So, with the best will in the world, you want to get back to normal. Your life has changed. What are the big things that you, during that particular dark period, what things changed in your life that you had possibly taken for granted?
Oh, gosh. I mean, this is the thing. We take our ability to sense our environment completely for granted. I certainly did. And I took my vision for granted, which actually, when I went and did all the research that I did into our visual system, it was very humbling because I suddenly felt, how could I possibly have done my job and not realise what I had? And that was an incredible experience to realise these, oh my goodness, I mean, our sensory system is so powerful, it's so complex. And so when you have two of your senses knocked out, of course, all the other senses become more important, and I relied upon all those other senses in my body to kind of survive.
Do you think it would have been easier to actually withdraw and become more isolated?
I think there is a certain isolation that happens anyway. For somebody who wasn't used to not having sight, that was a very strange thing for me because the rules of engagement change. And so, for example, I would, you know, grab the hand of anybody that came in because their voice wasn't enough back then. So I had to kind of find other ways to compensate. And I think that was to avoid me being isolated, to avoid me sinking into this dark hole. I was forever needing people around me to kind of remind me that I was still here. And also, it's like anything, if you say positive things out loud, like, I'm going to walk a bit further, I'm going to try this today, the people around you mirror it, and then you hear it back again, and it's very encouraging. So I think I did a lot of things to avoid myself being isolated or sinking too far. And actually, the people around me were brilliant at helping perpetuate that.
I sometimes think that for family members, it can be just as hard in a different way, though, because they want to help you. How did this impact your relationship with your husband? It must have been difficult for him as well.
It was extremely difficult for him. And he's very a different personality to me, so he responded differently. And, he wanted to make it all go away, you know, of course, and he wanted everything back to normal. But my husband was fantastic. He, he did everything he could. He spent a lot of time with me. We had some time off, and we would, you know, he'd help me walk up the drive with my stick, and he would champion everything. In fact, he challenged me quite a lot, particularly when my vision was starting to come back. And in fact, that challenging was great because we'd be standing there and I had very little colour to begin with. And so he'd challenge me and go, what colour is this? And I'd be like, well, it's green. No, it's not. It's blue. We'd have all these big discussions. And actually, I think that was part of the camaraderie and kind of the encouragement that he offered me was challenging me all the time and keeping me going. But you're right, it's very difficult for carers because they aren't you. They aren't inside your head. They, with the best will in the world, they'll never know what it's like and how you feel.
Now, you've been involved in some interesting stuff, which we'll come on to in a moment, but I just wanted to ask you, this seems one of these diseases that perhaps people don't know much about. Do you still hold with the fact that you will get your sight back at some day, or don't you live that way? Do you just live in the now?
It's funny, I always say I'm kind of 95%, you know, I accept this is where I am, this is what I have, but I have a 5% window because I just think, you know, I won't ever close that door because I've experienced some miraculous, incredible things in the last couple of years having gone through this journey. And so therefore, I will never close the door to something might happen or some new development might come within visual science and rehab. So, yeah, and also the other thing is our brains are so plastic. There are, you know, we can develop new channels, new ways of doing things. And I've already adapted enormously. And so I do sometimes wonder if there's ways I could continue that adaption and maybe improve or at least utilize the vision I have in the most optimal way. That's probably kind of where I'm heading for, is use what I've got the best I can.
Now, you've been involved with some interesting science at Cambridge University. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So because of my TV background, when I was going through my recovery, I experienced some very, very strange phenomena. So this was things like when colour was starting to reappear, I had a sort of a very murky, muddy vision. So I was looking through this sort of swirling mist. And colour was very muted, very, very low level. And then suddenly one day, blue started to appear. But they didn't just appear like I would expect them to. They fizzed and spit. It was like a lit sparkler. And this was just so crazy. I thought, I have to go and talk to scientists and understand what this is. And that's what led me to go and design a big exhibition that kind of used my case study as a way of communicating some of these very complex processes, these visual processes and neuroscience processes that we all have. But, I mean, I knew nothing about it, so I really needed a lot of help. And Cambridge have been fantastic, and we've worked together on a number of different projects, and they've been involved with the book with helping me understand the science of my sight. I mean, that's basically what we've done. We've unraveled it all.
And you've created some fabulous art, haven't you?
Yes, so that was a project called The Beach. So during my recovery, one of the things that was incredibly helpful for me was to use some meditation techniques, meditation and breathing and visualization techniques. And one of these was particularly powerful, which is something called a visualized sanctuary. So it's a mental safe place you create inside your head. And I would go to this place, which was a beach, over and over and over. And it was so powerful because it allowed my body to calm. It gave me a break from this horrendous experience that I was having. And it was my coping mechanism, and it was very, very successful for me. And I think it probably sped up part of my mental recovery. And so I talked to the scientists about this, and we ended up devising an immersive installation that invited members of the public to wear EEG headsets, which EEG records your live brain frequencies. And we invited our members of the public to try a little bit of this meditation and mindfulness for themselves. And then we showed them their mindful brainwaves converted into music and art at the end, which was, mind-blowing for quite a lot of people.
I've seen some of the art, and it's staggering, actually. And it's just incredible, isn't it? You think your life changed its direction and you've been involved with things now that you would never have even thought about. I mean, you're now an author, a published author, we have to say. Your book's Patient H69, and it's called My Second Sight. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so the book came about after the Cambridge exhibition, and I'd been writing a blog. And actually, what I realised when I look back on it, actually, I was writing a book, but I just didn't want to call it that. So I wrote a blog, and the reason it was like a book is that it's linear. And so people were going onto the blog and reading it, and rather than just reading the odd post, which tends to be what people do, they were on there for 8 hours at a time, reading the whole story. So Bloomsbury got sent the blog by somebody I know, and that was fantastic. They were very interested. And yeah, it all happened really quite quickly. And so then I had to go and research the rest of the vision science that I needed for the book and work with Dr. Will Harrison at Cambridge. And we spent months going through that. And yeah, and it's amazing now to publish a book. I mean, it's just, it's a lifelong dream come true.
I was just going to ask, do you have any regrets about this? But I'm assuming, apart from the obvious, you must feel that your life's quite enriched now.
Yes, I decided, actually, and this was a conscious decision quite early on, that if this was going to take something away from me, it was giving me something back. And I think I had kind of, you know, a teeth-gritted kind of attitude towards that, which was, yeah, I'm going to get something. Because I think, aside from the fact this is, you know, clearly it's an intriguing story for people, there's such a lot we can learn. I mean, I went from complete non-scientist, I was a non-sciencey person, I really knew nothing, to now being what I describe as a complete science geek. And I think, well, if I can understand all this stuff, then other people can. And it is just so fascinating. So I have become incredibly enriched and had doors open to me that I never would have expected. And that's been a great experience.
So what's next for you?
I'm working on a second book and a factual TV series. We're doing a proposal for that. So we've got a few things in the pipeline. I'm still working with Cambridge. We have all sorts of plans afoot.
Now, your book's called Patient H69, My Second Sight. How can we get a copy of this? Because the interesting thing is you've actually narrated this book yourself, haven't you?
So the book publishes today, which I'm absolutely thrilled about. It comes out through Bloomsbury. So it can be bought through Amazon or Bloomsbury or any major book retailer. Yes, and there is an audio version as well through Audible, which I'm absolutely thrilled about because I got to narrate that. And that was a great experience as well. So, yeah, just so excited. I can't believe it.
Vanessa Porter, it's been an absolute privilege to chat with you, and we wish you the best on your journey, and I'd love it if you gave us an update at some point.
Of course, I'd absolutely love to. Thank you so much.